Better with the Milestones podcast. This is episode 32, and today we'll be discussing early intervention therapy and ongoing therapy through life, and what it would be like if children with special needs did not receive these services. Of course, I cannot predict the future of all kids with special needs, but I am speaking in general terms today. I will be making a lot of generalizations for the purpose of this discussion as a whole. I did receive a request to talk about this subject, and because we all, that is, all of us therapists, understand why we do what we do, we know how the services we provide benefit the kids and the families we work with, but I realized when I received this topic request that not everyone out there actually knows what things would look like for people with special needs without therapy services. We can look back to history to know that before developmental delays and other childhood conditions were well understood, many of the kids with special needs ended up in state facilities or hospitals. They were often put on medications or other unique treatments for trying to see if the doctors could cure them of their ailments or issues. Now that things like autism, sensory processing, Down syndrome, and other diagnoses are well known, this doesn't happen anymore. We also have far advanced medical treatments and technologies that babies who are born prematurely or when there are difficulties with the labor or birthing process, the babies are surviving much more often than they did before. So things are not exactly the same as they were in history. But let's just consider some possibilities that are fitting for this day and age. Let's start with the early intervention time, birth through 5 years. Again, I will be overgeneralizing here because every child is different and every diagnosis is different. I'm looking at this from the standpoint of, let's wait and see. What I mean is, the infant or child may not be doing what the parents think they should be doing by their age, but they figure they will just wait and see what happens over the next few months or years, basically assuming that their child will eventually catch up with other kids their age. Some people would say things like, they'll talk when they want to. They're just doing things in their own time. They'll do it eventually. In the case of kids who were not born prematurely with some type of genetic or chromosomal condition or some other type of developmental delay, this may be true. They might just do things in their own time and catch up with their peers before things become a real concern. However, for kids who are at risk for developmental delays, this approach is not recommended. Here's why. They are at risk for continuing to be delayed in that one area and for developing additional delays in other areas as well. In early years, developmental milestones are highly connected to each other. When a child starts to fall behind in one area of milestones and then continues to fall further behind in that area, they will likely start to fall behind in other areas that develop as a result of the other areas being developed. For example, babies who are delayed in their ability to push up on their hands and knees could continue to be delayed in the activities that come next. Crawling, sitting independently, getting in and out of sitting by themselves, pulling up to standing at furniture, and so on. So if the child is behind in those activities, they will most likely also be behind in some of the fine motor skills like holding one toy in each hand, banging two toys together, attempting to stack one block on top of another, reaching into a container and removing toys or other items. Why would they be behind in the fine motor activities? Well, if they weren't able to sit independently, they will not be able to do some of these things like container play or banging two toys together because they will not be able to balance in sitting to keep themselves upright. They might need to put one hand down on the ground to support themselves. Now, if someone is holding them, they might be able to do the fine motor activities, but this indicates to me that they would be at risk because they cannot do it without support when they're at an age when they should be able to. The reasons why they can't do these activities could vary depending on the individual child, possibly due to low muscle tone, weaker muscles in general, sensory processing, or some other physical condition. The reasons are not the actual point here. The point is, one thing leads to another in cases of children who are considered by the early intervention community to be at risk for developmental delays. We often call these things red flags for development because they are like warning signs that something may be going on that has or has not been identified yet. These warning signs are important to watch for and not ignore or wait and see. So if the developmental milestones continue to go on without intervention, the effects could be exponential. Gross motor delays early on could lead to fine motor delays and language or communication delays and so on. When these kids finally get to start kindergarten, they get to the first day and the teacher starts to discover over the next few weeks that the child is maybe highly uncoordinated. They fall out of their chair frequently. They can't write their name or any shapes on the paper. They would rather do anything but try to draw or write in some cases. As I said before, this is a gross overgeneralization, but the point is that the milestones may or may not have eventually progressed during the wait-and-see time. If they did progress, they could still be behind their same-aged peers. For example, if fine motor skills were difficult because gross motor skills were delayed, the child may have avoided the fine motor activities that were available in their environment because they were hard and no one was concerned about those puzzles or shapes, orders, or coloring anyway. The problem with that is those fine motor activities in the birth to five age range usually have multiple benefits, not just fine motor skills, but cognitive or problem solving aspects like turning the pieces will make them fit, or finding the matching pictures or shapes or colors. They are often great activities for building language and communication by labeling the pictures, shapes, and colors. Drawing attention and cooperating by playing the activities alongside with peers, plus social skills of taking turns with others during the games or activities. All of these are benefits of playing even simple games like a puzzle or shapes order, or games like Candyland or matching bingo. These are not only valuable lessons for kids to learn before they are turned loose in a classroom. This is a place where they will benefit from having those skills to be able to get along with the other kids in school and make new friends. In addition to that, if the teacher sees that at some point during the school year the child is behind the other kids academically, they may refer the child for testing at that point. Teachers have a lot going on and do their best to keep track of what each and every child can do and what each child struggles with. Unfortunately, they may not be able to give this child the one-on-one attention they need to be successful in the classroom. Let's say the child gets tested by the school district and they determine the child would benefit from some type of therapy services at school. Whether this gets noticed in kindergarten, third grade, or seventh grade, to me, they're all behind the game. The earlier the child is identified as having academic concerns, the better. However, the ideal time for making changes within the child's brain is during the very early years, mostly the 0 to 3 years old. This is referred to as a sensitive period in a person's life. It is generally accepted, due to brain research studies, that birth to 3 years is one of those sensitive periods in time. A sensitive period is thought of as a time where the brain is open to learning many things. You can think of it as a time where learning is occurring naturally, but given exposure to additional learning concepts, the child can more readily learn those concepts during this sensitive period. This is also a time when the number of synapses in a child's brain grows exponentially. It is thought that the number of synapses increases by 6 times the amount from birth to age 3. A synapse is the gap between neurons which allows signals to move between the neurons. Think of it as a connection in the brain between neurons. Also, by 2 to 3 years, the brain has twice as many synapses as it will have as an adult. This is because of the sensitive period in early childhood, where the synapses are rapidly increasing, and the child is at a time where they are learning things more easily. As we grow past this early childhood time into adulthood, our brains basically get rid of the synapses that we don't use that often. This is why the number of synapses goes down with age. This is also why it is so important to capitalize on the sensitive period with kids while they're in that birth to 3 years range, especially when considering children who are at risk for developmental delays or who are showing delays in development already. This is a prime time in their life for potentially making changes or connections in their brain. Early intervention therapy is aimed at increasing those connections in the young child's brain to give them a boost by exposing them to the areas of development that are difficult for them and are areas they are showing delays in. This includes physical, language, social, emotional, self-help, visual, cognitive, sensory areas, and more. Without this early intervention therapy, the child may continue to show delays and become more delayed by the time kindergarten starts. At that point, as I was saying before, if they start receiving therapy services in the school system between the ages of 5 to 18 years old, the amount and speed of changes in growth may be slower. The synapses are not rapidly forming anymore. They're still forming, but not as quickly as during the sensitive period. So the opportunities for learning are still there, but may not be as quick as they could have been early on. Therefore, the consequences of this could be that the child will need to continue with therapy services longer through their school years. This is not a guarantee, of course, as all kids are different. However, this is a generalized discussion, so I'm generalizing here as well. For those of you who like numbers, one study in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2001 found that an early intervention program costing $6,730 per child generated a return on investment of $47,759 for each child. This means that every $1 invested, $7.10 was returned to society in the form of decreased expenditures. The expenditures are things like additional special education services, like more therapies, and repeating grade levels, not passing the current grade level, therefore staying in the school system even longer. Another study by the Education Commission of the States found the following. Massachusetts saved $2,705 per child in 1 year after deducting costs of early intervention services. Florida reported a total net savings of $20,887 per child over 20 years. And in Montana, 36% of children who received early intervention services no longer required special education services by second grade. And another 33% only required limited services. Not only does this show a cost savings for states, but more importantly, it shows that kids are benefiting from the early services and learning more early on, to where they can have a better chance of catching up to their peers at an earlier age. Now, there are many kids who receive early intervention services and will continue to benefit from ongoing therapy throughout their school years. Depending on the child's situation or diagnosis, therapy may be helping them, but they may still need services for longer or possibly life. Certain medical diagnoses, genetic or chromosomal syndromes, and things like autism are situations where therapy may be necessary and warranted throughout their lifespan. The idea is, with getting services early on, however, that the services later are fewer and hopefully less frequent than if they had started receiving therapy later in life or later during their school years. Or, ideally, that they don't need any services at all by the time they graduate high school, but hopefully even before this age. If a child with special needs obtains the necessary requirements for graduating high school and they have turned 18, they might continue to stay in the school system until they turn 21. Some kids will benefit from additional assistance beyond classroom things before services through the school district ends. In this case, the school aims to provide them additional assistance to prepare them for a transition to adult life and community-based skills, including possible job skills and independent living. The goal here is to provide additional real-life opportunities to learn how to transition to a life as independent as possible for their situation. Without this program, there may be less chance for success in being able to live on their own at some point as an adult. They may gain skills for employment opportunities, as well as social skills for getting along with others outside of school and in the community in general. More possibility for living on their own or in a community-supported environment. Without this opportunity, there may be less chance of gaining employment and maintaining the job for a period of time, including being able to do the jobs, but also being able to get along with coworkers from a social skills standpoint. The program can help facilitate the transition from a structured learning environment to a wide, open, non-structured, independent community environment. Generalized long-term effects of an at-risk child who does not receive therapy services throughout early childhood and school-aged years could include things such as difficulty obtaining and maintaining a job, possibly leading to more dependence on welfare systems, poor social skills due to language and social-emotional issues, sensory issues affecting their ability to live independently, poor reading and writing skills helpful for jobs and for general independent living, and so on. Of course, even with all of the therapy in the world, there's still many kids turned adult that will still struggle with all of these things once they graduate high school. Hopefully you can see from this discussion, though, the importance of starting early to have the best potential chance of making gains and teaching kids how to become as independent as possible. This is why, as early interventionists, we scrutinize and look at all of the details of what your child is able to do. We want to celebrate even the smallest accomplishment, for one, because we are excited to see them make progress, but also because we know that one small accomplishment leads to another small accomplishment, and it continues on until they start to make bigger and bigger gains. So many parents go through times where they feel like they're doing all of the therapy and sensory diets and everything else they can possibly squeeze into each day. Yet it seems it's hard to get you to see that it may not be obvious in their actions or behaviors each day. But changes don't happen in one day. They happen over a course of time, days, weeks, months, and years. You are making a difference whether you see it on a day-to-day basis or not. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check my website, mymidwesttherapy.com, for Amazon items that I've listed this week. And also follow me on Instagram under the name Milestones Podcast.